Shanti Sells and Daniel Strauss are two border activists who were arrested and are facing felony charges for providing humanitarian aid to three migrants. They face $500,000 fines and prison terms of up to 15 years. Daniel Strauss and Shanti Sells were volunteers with the Arizona group No More Deaths, a network set up primarily to prevent deaths of migrants who are crossing the Sonoma Desert. Daniel and Shanti were driving three men to get treatment for extreme hunger and thirst by volunteer medical professionals in Tucson when they were stopped by U.S. Border Patrol and arrested. The two activists say they will defend their actions in trial and take on the United States. This trial will set ground rules for future cases of its kind. We'll talk with Shanti Sells and later with Daniel Strauss. Shanti, welcome to Law and Disorder.
Thank you. Good to be on the show.
Shanti, what are you being charged with?
Right now, Daniel and I are facing two felony charges. One charge of aiding and abetting in furtherance of illegal presence in the United States, which is basically a human smuggling charge, and a second charge of conspiracy.
What happened leading up to these charges?
Daniel and I work with an organization, No More Deaths, which is a coalition of human rights organizations and border action groups down in southern Arizona along the border that have come together in response to the thousands of deaths that have happened along the U.S.-Mexico border.
Especially during the summer months when temperatures get into the hundreds on a daily basis and thousands of migrants have died in the last 10 or so years. What we do is we go out into the desert and go on patrols and look for people who are in distress and give food, water, and medical assistance.
Previous part of our protocol, which we had developed with the U.S. government, was to evacuate very sick people to hospitals and clinics so they could receive the care they needed. A lot of people need to be put on IVs. They need numerous medical attention that you can't give them in the field. And part of our protocol was to evacuate people to hospitals and clinics as a life-saving measure. And on the day of Daniel and my arrest, we were evacuating three men who had been found in the desert. They had been lost for 4 days. They had had nothing to eat for those 4 days, and the only water they'd had to drink was from cattle tanks that are throughout the desert. That's extremely filthy, bacteria-laden water. And they were suffering bacterial infections that were causing them to vomit and have diarrhea, which will rapidly causing dehydration in somebody who's already dehydrated. And they all had blisters on their feet so bad they couldn't even walk. And this is a clear case that they were in need of evacuation.
Give us a sense of what it's like for someone crossing the border. What do they face? How long are they walking? What kind of terrain? How hot is it?
The trip through the Arizona desert is seriously miserable, especially during the summer. Migrants are usually traveling in groups between 30 and 100 people, all traveling with a single guide or coyote, and they're paying $2,000 per person to make this trip. So these coyotes really don't think very much about the life of a single person who becomes ill, who falls behind. They really are concerned about getting the whole group across and receive all this money on the other end. So we see a lot of people who have fallen, people who are old or are sick before they started, who just can't make it and they get left behind in the desert. They have no idea how far it is to help, whether they can get help if they do reach a town. They get heat stroke, heat exhaustion, and it's a really miserable, terrible way to die.
So the people that you, these are the people who fall behind. Those are the people that you're assisting.
For the most part, we do encounter large groups of people as well, and then we give everyone we find food and water.
We do intentional patrols. We have a 24-hour camp that we set up in one of the more highly trafficked areas of the border, where we run patrols out of that area in search of people in distress. And we do driving patrols, and we also do walking patrols on the footpaths that people take when they cross the border. And in this instance, there were nine men found on one of these footpaths about 10 miles north of the border, sitting in an arroyo, which is a dry wash. And of those nine men, these three who Daniel and I evacuated were the ones who were in dire need of medical assistance.
And how far were you driving them to get medical assistance?
The closest place where there is an operating hospital is Tucson, which is about 50 miles from the location we found them.
And Shanti, so you had done this before, but this time they changed the rules on you and arrested you? Is that what happened?
Yes, I've been involved in this coalition, this organization, for 2 years. I participated in evacuations, and we have a very strict protocol that we follow that, like I said, was set up with the Border Patrol. We had numerous meetings with the Border Patrol. We presented our protocol and said, this is what we're doing. These are the actions we take. And in dire circumstances, we evacuate people from the desert. And whenever we do evacuation, it's always under guidance of medical professionals, and it's always under guidance of lawyers who are part of our protocol and make sure that we're acting within the law. And
Shanti, what is the protocol?
The protocol is, it's basically how we, when we find people in the field in need of attention, we always give food and water. Everyone we find is in need of food and water. And the protocol is more specific along the lines of evacuating. So if you find someone and their symptoms show that you can't just give them food and water and know they're going to be okay, you assess their condition, you ask questions, ask about their journey, ask about previous health conditions they may have, diabetes, heart conditions, and then you call a medical professional. If there isn't a medical professional with you, we try to staff all of our patrols with medical professionals, but due to lack of volunteers, sometimes we don't have that on every patrol.
The journey from where they started in Mexico to where they often get picked up in the United States could be up to 4 days of walking in these intense heat, and no one is prepared for that journey. They're carrying maybe a gallon of water, and you need that amount of water in just about half a day in order to stay hydrated in those kind of temperatures. They don't have proper food. They don't have proper footwear. The guides lie to them. They tell them it's only an hour walk or only, a few-hour walk till we get to the point where we get picked up, and they wind up being out in the desert for days on end, especially if they become lost.
Daniel, how many years are you facing on these two charges?
The maximum penalty is 15 years in prison. They're very, very serious charges, and also a fine of $500,000.
And have you been getting much support from people out there that hear about it?
Yeah, we've gotten huge amounts of support from church groups, labor organizations. The Amnesty International has supported us. The ACLU has supported us.
Good.
Daniel, could we go back to the scene of the arrest? What happened when you were arrested?
Well, first off, the week of our arrest was one of the hottest weeks on record in Arizona. It was during a 45-day heat spell where temperatures over 100 degrees every day. And the week of our arrest also set a record for the number of migrants who died. 78 migrants died just in the Arizona area of the desert that week.
Wow. I've been down there then, and it's so hot that planes can't take off because the air is too thin to support an airplane.
Within the law to save lives in the desert, and it was decided that, if someone is determined to be extremely ill, what we have to do is we have to call a doctor or a nurse in Tucson or someone who's with us at the moment and get their medical approval for this evacuation. So we called on this day, we called a nurse and we called a doctor and we spoke with them and we described the symptoms that the migrants were throwing up, that they had a bloody stool, that they had blisters that covered their feet and couldn't hardly walk. And the doctor and the nurse made the professional medical decision that these people needed to be brought to medical attention right away or else they could potentially die out there. So we had the three migrants in Shanti's vehicle. Every vehicle that's used for patrols for No More Deaths organization has large signs on the side that say Samaritan Patrols, so that the Border Patrol and the community know who we are and what we're doing. And up until that day, it had never been a problem. We had a pretty good relationship with the Border Patrol. They would, they would wave to us as we drove by and we'd wave back. But this day, for some reason, Border Patrol agent turned on his lights and pulled us over after following us for about 13 miles.
When did you get arrested, actually? What was the process by which you got arrested?
Well, we were driving the three men towards Tucson, and whenever we're operating and doing patrols, we have large placards, large signs that we put on the sides of our vehicles that say Samaritans. Very, very obvious, very very open. And so we were driving towards Tucson, and the Border Patrol agent got behind us and pulled us over. And he approached the vehicle and asked Daniel and I if the men in our vehicle were illegal. And Daniel, who was driving's response was, I don't know. We found these men in the desert. They're sick. We don't check papers. We didn't ask them their legal status before we helped them. And the agent asked the men in English, do you speak English? And they didn't respond. And he declared them illegal and put us under arrest.
But who's
men out of our care.
Who ultimately made the decision to prosecute you? That decision must have been made pretty far up the line, wouldn't you think?
From my understanding, it was the assistant U.S. attorney who was on call that weekend that we were arrested who made the decision to press charges.
Yeah, but doesn't that go, particularly in a case so dramatic as this, my idea, that would go even further up the line.
Shanti, was anyone else arrested from No More Deaths?
There has never been an arrest before Daniel and I, and there has not been one since. And there have been a couple cases where volunteers have been pulled over with migrants in their car. One instance, they were driving a man south. He wanted to return back to Mexico. They were taking him back. And both those two instances and both those times, the people were taken from the care of the volunteers, but no arrests were made.
Was the Border Patrol agent who pulled you over, was this a new Border Patrol agent or someone you had worked with before?
I didn't recognize the agent at all. I don't know how long he'd been on the job.
And what happened when the agent pulled you over?
He looked at the three men in the back of the car, and he asked us if they were illegal. And we said that we didn't know because we didn't check their documents. But we did know that they were sick and that they needed to go to a hospital, and that's where we were taking them. And he asked them in English, he said, "Do you guys speak English?" And they didn't respond, and he turned to us and said, "Yep, they're illegal, and you guys are under arrest." He took us right there.
Did you identify yourself as being a member of an organization that tries to help people in desperate circumstances?
Oh, for sure. You know, well, we have, first off, the signs on the side of our car, and we said, you know, we work for No More Deaths, and we're bringing these people to medical attention.
What's your understanding of what the law, what was your understanding then and now, and it may not have changed, about what the law says about what you were doing?
We are being prosecuted under the law that it is illegal to transport someone in furtherance of their illegal presence in the country. You know, our interpretation of that law that we were following was that if we brought someone to a bus station, that would be against the law because we would be furthering their presence in the United States. But bringing someone for a solely medical reason wasn't in furthering their presence in the United States. It was just saving their life. You know, that wasn't illegal under that clause.
Daniel, for the period of time that you've been making these trips, how many hospital runs would you say you've done?
Probably 8 or 9.
It's not very many.
I mean, last summer, for example, No More Deaths volunteers came across 3,000 migrants during the 3 months of operation, and 68 of those were brought to medical facilities.
Have you ever been stopped by the police and then let go?
I was pulled over one time. I didn't have anyone in the car. They were just, I don't know why they pulled me over, just to do some routine check.
Tell us a little bit about what the impact of your arrest has been on others at No More Deaths and organizations that provide humanitarian aid.
Sure. First off, it's pretty clear from looking at the facts that the government is not doing enough to stop people from dying out there on the border. Every year since policies of border militarization have put into effect, which has been starting in the early 1990s, every year has been a record number of deaths. Every year it gets worse. The more Border Patrol agents they add, the more money they spend, the more people die. So it's very clear that humanitarian assistance is greatly needed in that region. And these arrests have really put fear into people who otherwise might help someone. They might stop and give food or water, or even take someone to a hospital who really needed it. They might not do that now, and those people out there might not make it. I think it's really necessary for the government to port all humanitarian assistance on the border, whether the person's documented or not.
Yeah, I think that's
because
right.
Everyone should support human life.
Humanitarian aid, your slogan, humanitarian aid is never a crime, that we're saying on the No More Deaths website, it's based in a very strong foundation of international law that says you never criminalize aid that saves and assists life.
How long ago did these arrests happen?
July of last year, July 2005.
And tell us a little bit about going forward now. You're going to trial when?
We are expecting to go to trial on October 3rd. This is our fourth trial date that we've been given. So, you know, I'm expecting to go, but realize that it could be postponed again. But we are preparing to go to trial on October 3rd.
Shanti, to take a step back, after you were arrested, No More Deaths continued to do the same type of work.
Yes.
So people were continuing to be assisted and picked up in the desert who were in dire need of humanitarian assistance, and yet no more arrests were made.
Yes, but I'd like to point out that even though part of our protocol is evacuation of very sick people, that I just as an example, last year, due to our No More Deaths encountered over 3,000 people in the field. And of those 3,000, 68 of those people were evacuated. And so most of what we do is hand out food and water. We see a lot of people who are already in custody with Border Patrol, and we stop and give food and water to those people because a lot of times there isn't that supply for them when they're being processed through Border Patrol. And so evacuation is one very small part of the work we do.
Seems to me, by choosing to prosecute you and not reversing that decision and now taking you to trial, they're doing to you what, say, they did to our friend here in New York, Lynn Stewart. They're making an example out of you.
Yeah, it's a test case.
Yes, I believe that too, especially in light of the proposed legislation that we're seeing, where they're looking to criminalize not only migrants themselves, but any person who assists an undocumented person anywhere in the country, whether it's a social worker, a teacher. And I do believe that this is a test case to see what will stand and what will be able to...
Assisting would even include humanitarian help, as you're given, I mean, according to the statute, I gather. I mean, that's what they'll try and say.
Contrast what they're doing to you to, say, the stance they take towards the Minutemen, who are doing the opposite to these people who are coming across looking for jobs.
Do you have any relationship to the Minutemen? I mean, do you see them in the field? I mean, what, do you ever hear about them? Do they harass you guys?
I personally haven't had a lot of interactions with them in the field. I've interacted with them at some, in-town protests, that sort of thing. There are other groups that work more closely. There's a group in southern Arizona called the Legal Observers, which watch the Minutemen to make sure that they aren't committing any abuses. But I personally haven't had a lot of interaction with the Minutemen.
Can you just explain what the Minutemen are, who they are?
The Minutemen, to my understanding, are a volunteer group of civilians who believe that the border is not being enforced well enough and that it's their duty to come to the border and help enforce it. And they do that by watching the border with weapons, with guns. And any group of migrants they may see, they call the Border Patrol or what I consider to be an extreme human rights violation. They will round those people up and hold them at gunpoint until the Border Patrol comes and gets them.
So these people are racist vigilantes that the United States government supports, and you people are just trying to prevent suffering and death are being prosecuted in a nutshell.
You know, and the government hasn't come out and said straight out they support the Minutemen, but the Minutemen have never had any sort of legal action taken against them for holding people at gunpoint.
Shanti, do you know if the Minutemen have ever actually fired their weapons?
Unfortunately, I don't know a lot about their actions. And again, I don't believe they're really that effective at what they do. You know, they come to the border for about a month of the year in April. They have a strong presence. And they set up camp in a certain area and declare that this 5 or 10 mile radius is going to, they're going to keep this, you know, migrant-free zone. And they may be effective in that area, but the truth is people just go around them.
If people want to give you some support for the trial, is there a website? Is there a place people can go to find out more?
Absolutely. We've been mounting a campaign for the past year called Humanitarian Aid is Never a Crime, where we have raised awareness for the work No More Deaths does and the trial that Daniel and I are facing. Our website, www.nomoredeaths.org, has all that information. We're in the midst of our summer action right now. We're running projects. We're continuing a camp in the desert. We're also doing projects in northern Mexico, meeting buses of deportees and giving them supplies they need, food and water, medical assistance, because a lot of times people are deported who are in severe medical distress and are not given the care in Border Patrol. So we're trying to give them that care on the Mexican. But we're always calling if there are people who feel they can take some time out and come down and volunteer. It's an amazing experience. I think it's very important for people in other parts of the country to really understand what's going on, to come here and work it and live it. But we're also in need of all sorts of support, financial, political, and especially as the trial gets closer in September, that we'll be picking up that effort strongly again.
You and Shanti are both 23, yes?
I'm 24.
You're 24, so
at the moment, I think Shanti's still 24.
How many years have you been doing this?
2 summers so far.
2 summers, and it's a volunteer operation?
Yep.
What did you guys do this summer? Because you were arrested last summer. You're facing trial in the fall. What did you do this summer?
This summer, I'm not working directly in the border. I've been talking about border issues. I'm giving presentations around the country along with Shanti. Yeah. Shanti still lives down in Tucson and is working every day out in the desert, giving aid to people who are in need. The organization is completely volunteer and donation-based, so we're constantly looking for support throughout the country, volunteers to go to Arizona and go out on patrols with us just to give financial support.
What's the shortest period of time a person can volunteer for and still do something meaningful?
We usually ask for volunteers to come for about a one-week period. Give them time to be trained, to get used to the environment out in the desert, and to still have a meaningful, helpful experience.
Daniel, we're going to put up your website, nomoredeaths.org, on our website, which is lawanddisorder.org. We'll try to help you in every way we can. We want to keep in touch with you and follow your trial and support you, and good luck to you.
Appreciate it.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
The first link on the No More Deaths website links to the USA homepage at Amnesty International, or you can go there directly to take an action to help out Daniel and Shanti. AmnestyUSA.org. Hit the USA page.
We'll follow this this trial, and we'll report back to the listeners on it.
And they're looking for volunteers, so if people want to go down there and help, it sounds like they really could use it.
But we'll put up a link on our page also, lawanddisorder.org.